Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we really get into those fascinating, complex topics.
Yeah.
Today, we're going to be looking at a 2019 study that has some really big implications for how therapy is conducted.
Okay.
It kind of gets into the nitty-gritty of how therapists in training handle their own biases mm-hmm. when working with clients from different religious and spiritual backgrounds.
That's right. Yeah. This deep dive takes us into some fascinating area of research, going beyond the usual, you know, talk of cultural competence and into deeper waters of cultural humility.
I like that, deeper waters.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're diving into this study called Trainees, Cultural Humility, and Implicit Associations About Clients and Religious, Irreligious, and Spiritual Identities. Mm. A Mixed Method Investigation.
Wow.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
It's published in the Journal of Psychology and Theology.
Okay.
This study examines how those, you know, subconscious biases that we all have might be showing up in therapy.
Right.
And even if you're not a therapist yourself, this is really relevant because we all have these biases.
Yeah.
And understanding them can help us in any interaction, not just therapy.
Exactly. And I think this study really focuses on the fact that clients often want to discuss their religious and spiritual beliefs in therapy, mm-hmm. which we'll call RAS from now on.
Okay.
And integrating those beliefs into treatment can be quite beneficial.
Yeah.
But there's a real lack of training on this topic.
That's interesting.
So this research is super important.
So tell me a bit about the study's design and who the participants were.
Yeah. So the study involved 10 master's level clinical psychology trainees.
Okay.
All kind of at a point where they were getting real world experience in therapy settings.
Got it.
A mix of 9 women, 1 man, mostly white.
Okay.
And the researchers used both self-reported measures like surveys on cultural humility mm-hmm. and something called implicit association tests or IATs.
Okay, yeah. IATs, those are the ones that measure your reaction time, right?
Yeah.
Like how quickly you link Christian with a good client versus atheist with a good client.
That's the gist, yeah. It's about measuring the strength of those subconscious links.
Interesting.
To see if there's a bias in how we perceive different groups. It is important to remember, though, this was a pilot study mm-hmm. with a small sample size.
Right.
So future studies would benefit from having a larger and more diverse group to get a clearer picture.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, I know they also had a focus group with the trainees.
Yes.
What happened there?
The focus group was where the trainees got to react to their IAT results.
Okay.
And it really brought the concept of cultural humility to the forefront.
I bet there were some surprised faces in the room.
There were some surprised faces. Yep. Remember, these are individuals training to be therapists.
Yeah.
So they value being open-minded and accepting, but seeing those IAT scores suggesting they might have hidden biases they weren't aware of.
Right.
It must have been pretty jarring.
Yeah. So how did they handle that?
Well, at first...
Did they just brush it off?
Some did try to attribute their scores to things like being tired or distracted during the test.
Right.
But as the focus group continued... Something really interesting happened.
What's that?
They started acknowledging that perhaps their upbringing experiences or even media consumption might have played a role in shaping their implicit associations.
That's a big step.
It is.
Shifting from blaming external factors to looking inwards.
Absolutely.
What were the researchers looking for when they analyzed the conversations from these focus groups?
So they used a method called qualitative content analysis, which is a way of identifying recurring themes and patterns in conversations.
Okay.
Think of it as like carefully examining those conversations to understand the trainees' reactions to the IAT results.
So like, what do they find?
One key theme that emerged was this disconnect between the trainees' stated values and their IAT results.
Interesting.
You know, these trainees being in a clinical psychology program likely had some training in multiculturalism.
Right.
And genuinely believed in being unbiased.
Mm.
So to have those IAT scores challenge that belief led to some initial anger and frustration.
It makes sense to feel like your self-image is being challenged.
Exactly.
So how did they move past that?
Well, they started recognizing that perhaps their personal experiences, their upbringing, or even their media consumption could have influenced their implicit associations.
That must have taken some real self-awareness.
It does.
It's like holding up a mirror to your subconscious and realizing there are things you haven't even considered.
Yeah. And this realization is a key part of cultural humility.
Okay.
Recognizing that we all come to the table with our own unique perspective shaped by our life experiences.
So even with good intentions, therapists can still harbor biases.
Yeah.
What happens next? How do they turn this awareness into positive action?
That's an excellent question and something we'll delve deeper into in the next part.
Stay tuned. We'll be back after a short break to discuss how the trainees moved from awareness to action in developing cultural humility.
Sounds good.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Before the break, we were talking about how those subconscious biases we all have can show up even in therapy settings. And we left off with those clinical psychology trainees starting to realize that they too harbor these biases.
Yes, and that shift from deflecting blame to recognizing their own potential biases is a huge step towards cultivating cultural humility.
It sounds like this focus group played a crucial role in that process. Was it just the IAT results, or was it the group dynamic itself that helped them reach this understanding?
I think the group dynamic was key. You know, these are trainees who probably haven't had a lot of opportunity to openly discuss these complex issues.
Right.
Having that safe space to process their IAT results, share their reactions, and listen to each other's experiences, that's powerful.
Yeah, it makes sense. We often learn more from hearing others' perspectives and experiences than we do from just introspection alone.
Right. Yeah.
So they're starting to acknowledge their biases. What comes next? How do they actually apply this newfound awareness to their work with clients?
That's the million-dollar question, and it's something the study itself acknowledges as a crucial area for further exploration. The trainees expressed a desire to be more self-aware and sensitive to potential biases, but they lacked concrete strategies for putting those intentions into action.
So it's one thing to say, I want to be more culturally humble, but it's a whole other challenge to actually do it, especially in the complex dynamics of a therapy session.
Absolutely.
What kind of support do these future therapists need to bridge that gap between awareness and action?
This is where our training programs and supervisors have a crucial role to play. You know, it's not enough to simply raise awareness of implicit bias.
Right.
Trainees need practical tools and guidance for navigating real-world situations. Think of it like learning to drive. You can read all the manuals in the world, but you still need someone experienced in the passenger seat to guide you through those first few solo drives.
That's a great analogy. So how do we equip these driver's ed students of therapy to navigate the complexities of cultural and religious differences? What are some of the practical strategies that could be helpful?
One important strategy is to be mindful of the potential for bias in every interaction. It's about having that awareness in the back of your mind, almost like a mental sticky note reminding you to check your assumptions.
So instead of just going with your gut reaction, you take a moment to pause and consider, is this my bias talking, or is this a genuine clinical observation?
Exactly. And remember, it's not about beating yourself up for having biases. We all do.
Right.
It's about noticing them and making a conscious effort to prevent them from influencing your interactions with clients.
Awareness is a great starting point.
Yeah.
But I imagine it takes more than mental sticky notes to truly integrate cultural humility into your practice. What else can therapists do?
Seeking out supervision and consultation is essential. Having a trusted mentor or supervisor to discuss challenging cases, process your own feelings, and get feedback on your approach can be invaluable.
It's like having a cultural humility coach in your corner, helping you see those blind spots you might miss on your own.
Precisely, and ongoing continuing education is also crucial. You know, workshops, trainings, even online resources specifically focused on cultural humility. And working with clients from diverse backgrounds can provide therapists with the knowledge and skills they need to navigate these complexities.
It sounds like lifelong learning is a key part of being a culturally humble therapist.
It is.
It's not a checkbox you tick off. It's an ongoing journey.
Absolutely. And it's important to acknowledge that this study, while valuable, has some limitations.
Oh, that's right. We mentioned earlier that the sample size was small and not very diverse.
Yes. And the researchers also acknowledged that they only focused on a few specific religious and spiritual groups, so the findings might not be applicable to other identities.
Okay.
It's like they only explored a small corner of a vast and diverse landscape of beliefs and experiences.
It sounds like there's a real need for more research in this area, especially with larger and more diverse samples that reflect the full spectrum of religious and spiritual identities.
I agree. There's so much more to learn and understand. But even with these limitations, this study offers valuable insights that we can apply to our own lives, even if we're not therapists.
Okay, so we've talked about the study's findings and the importance of addressing implicit bias in therapy. But I'm curious, what are your personal takeaways from this research? What resonated with you the most?
What struck me most is how the study highlights that cultural humility is not about achieving some kind of perfect state of unbiasedness.
Okay.
It's about acknowledging our limitations, being open to learning, and continually striving to understand and appreciate perspectives different from our own.
So it's more about the journey than the destination.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that we all have biases, and that's okay.
Yeah.
The key is to be aware of them, challenge them, and make sure they're not negatively impacting our interactions with others.
That's such an important point, and it applies to so many areas of life, not just therapy.
You're absolutely right. Whether we're interacting with colleagues, friends, family, or strangers, that commitment to self-awareness and understanding can make a world of difference.
So how can our listeners, even those who aren't therapists, apply these insights to their own lives? What are some practical steps they can take?
A great starting point is simply to be more mindful of your own assumptions and judgments. You know, when you encounter someone who holds different religious or spiritual beliefs, then you take a moment to pause and ask yourself, what assumptions am I making about this person? Are those assumptions based on facts, or are they rooted in my own biases?
It's about challenging those knee-jerk reactions and taking the time to truly listen and understand.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah.
You know, if you're genuinely curious about someone's beliefs or experiences, ask them.
Yeah.
Most people are happy to share, especially if they feel like they're being listened to with respect and genuine interest.
Curiosity and respect, those are two powerful tools for bridging divides and building understanding.
I couldn't agree more. And remember, it's not about pretending that differences don't exist. It's about acknowledging those differences, respecting them, and finding ways to connect despite them.
So it's not about erasing our own identities or pretending to be someone we're not. It's about approaching those interactions with an open mind and a willingness to learn.
Precisely. And that learning process is a two-way street. We can all learn from each other's experiences and perspectives if we're willing to listen.
It sounds like cultural humility is ultimately about creating a more inclusive and compassionate world where everyone feels seen, heard, and respected.
I think that's a beautiful way to put it. It's about recognizing the inherent worth and dignity of every individual, regardless of their background or beliefs.
That's a powerful message, and it's something we can all strive for, both in our personal lives and in our professional roles.
Absolutely. And it starts with each of us taking responsibility for our own biases and making a conscious effort to be more understanding and accepting of others.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground today, from the specific findings of this study to the broader implications of cultural humility in all aspects of life.
It's been a fascinating discussion, and I hope our listeners are feeling inspired to embark on their own journeys of cultural humility.
I do too. But before we wrap things up, I want to circle back to one final point. You mentioned earlier that the study focused specifically on therapists and training. Do you think these findings have implications for seasoned therapists as well?
That's a great question, and I think the answer is a resounding yes, while the study focused on trainees. I believe the core principles of cultural humility apply to therapists at all stages of their careers. Even experienced therapists can benefit from ongoing self-reflection and continuing education to ensure they're providing culturally sensitive and effective care.
So it's not about reaching a certain level of experience and then assuming you've arrived. It's about maintaining that commitment to growth and learning throughout your career.
Exactly. The field of therapy is constantly evolving, and so is our understanding of culture, religion, and spirituality. You know, we need to stay curious, stay open-minded, and stay committed to providing the best possible care for our clients.
That's such an important reminder, and I think it's a perfect note to end on. We'll be back in a moment to wrap up this deep dive and leave you with a final thought-provoking nugget to ponder. And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into cultural humility.
Okay.
We've explored a lot today.
Yeah.
From the inner workings of those tricky IETs to how therapists in training are grappling with their own unconscious biases.
It's been a fascinating journey, you know, highlighting how cultural humility is an ongoing process, not a finish line. It's about constantly checking our assumptions and being willing to learn and grow.
And this learning is particularly critical for therapists because their clients come from such diverse backgrounds with a wide range of beliefs and values.
Absolutely.
And those beliefs and values are important even if they're different from the therapist's own.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's the therapist's responsibility to create an environment where those beliefs and values can be explored openly and respectfully.
Yeah.
You know, meeting their clients where they are not where the therapist thinks they should be.
So what's the main takeaway you want listeners to remember from this deep dive?
Okay.
What should they carry with them even after the episode ends?
The key takeaway, I think, is that cultural humility is not just for therapists, it's for everyone.
Right.
We live in such a diverse and interconnected world, and being able to connect with people from different backgrounds in a respectful and understanding way is crucial. You know, it's about building bridges rather than walls.
And it all starts with looking inward at our own biases.
Mm.
We've talked about how those biases can be unconscious.
Right.
So how can we become more aware of them?
It's a continual process of self-reflection.
Okay.
One powerful way is to just consider our reactions to people who hold different beliefs than we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do we make assumptions? Are we quick to judge?
Mm.
Those reactions can really reveal our biases and allow us to examine them more closely.
So instead of getting defensive or shutting down when confronted with different beliefs, we should use those moments as opportunities for learning and growth.
Exactly. Acknowledging our biases isn't about feeling guilty or ashamed.
Right.
It's about taking responsibility for our perceptions and striving to be more open-minded and compassionate.
It's a process of unlearning those old patterns and embracing new perspectives.
Absolutely. And that process can be uncomfortable at times.
Yeah.
But it's ultimately rewarding. It allows us to connect with others on a deeper level and create a more just equitable and compassionate world.
Beautifully said. I think that's a powerful message to end on. We all have the power to contribute to a more inclusive and understanding world, starting with ourselves.
I agree.
Thank you for joining us on this journey into the fascinating world of cultural humility. And remember, keep diving deeper into the complexities of the world around us.